Hello, and welcome to HIT Innovation Founder Stories podcast series. In this podcast, we will be speaking with Jakob Junnerhoff-Jonk, co-founder of Indomondo. Jakob shares his story of how he and his friends turned their passion for fitness and health into a brand, a sports community based on free, real-time GPS tracking of sporting activities. This is part one of a two-part series. If you would like to be featured in an upcoming podcast, please contact us here at www.hitconsultant.net.
The company is 4 years old, a little more actually. We came together, three of us, discussing different things that we wanted to do, and basically we all had a shared love for active lifestyles. We all came from various backgrounds in semi or professional sports, and we wanted really to see what we can do there to leverage that love for what we did when we were not working as consultants. And one of the things that was pretty obvious back in 2006 and 2007 was that social media was really coming on strong. It was back in the day when MySpace was really the leading community, but Facebook was rapidly picking up. And we figured that was an interesting trend. At the same time, I remember we were using different kinds of devices. I was a Suunto watch user, and other people were using Garmin, and some people were using the Nike Pod, and the Foot Pod, and people were using a ton of different stuff to track their training. But what was a real obstacle for us in terms of sharing it when we were not doing it together was that all of these tracking instruments were using their individual data silos. So I literally could not play with anybody not using a Suunto watch. And actually, by the time Suunto didn't have anything online, so I couldn't, you know, it was only an individual experience what I did. And those were sort of the two big things that were, one of them being really irritating to us. And the other thing was that you really had to be into this game to use these instruments, because they came off a pretty high intro price. The entry price for a Garmin at the time, and it's still pretty expensive for the high-end watches, you know, it was well above $500 for the stuff that we were using, meaning that basically the people who would use this were a relatively small group of people. And you know, at the time, I personally stopped doing semi-pro sports. You know, you just wanna have fun with your friends, being active, not necessarily just elite or semi-elite people. So the mere cost of these instruments was also an obstacle for us playing, basically just having fun with ourselves and our friends. And we sort of put these three things together, and we betted on the mobile. We basically, and this was contrary to every industry report at the time, we betted that GPS was going to get out in those mobiles by 2010 or 2011 be really common. And we'd made that bet in 2008. And nobody believed us at the time, nobody. And we came out with the first tracker, the first app in September 2008. And this doesn't sound like a long time ago, but this was before the iPhone had GPS functionality enabled. So nobody kind of looked at their phone as being a sports device. And when we tested this on people, they were like, "Yeah, but I'm never going to run with my phone nor cycle with it. You know, it's just a hassle bringing your phone onto this." So there are a lot of things. Kind of, but we really believe in it, and we believe in it because we thought we could make an instrument close to free by making it in a scalable way and using the functionality and the technology that was becoming common. And secondly, we thought we could really talk across the other barrier of people being able to share data, because we would integrate with whatever technology that we could get our hands on. So we're trying to really to break these barriers down by creating what we did, and that mobile tracker, that mobile app, was really what we needed. We needed that to be able to create this community and to be able to integrate with other types of devices. So that was really what drove the project. A lot of love, and then some thinking about what we can do, leveraging technology to overcome these barriers that we find, and we saw them as real issues. So that was what founded the company. And because we were so early on, it took a while to really catch on. But again, the iPhone completely changed this game for everybody. First of all, because GPS in your phone became available for a lot of people. Nokia had driven this beforehand, but Nokia was always, soon after iPhone came out, they started losing ground. And the app stores, of course, also helped this equation a lot. We benefited from being early out there on a lot of different platforms and really had a chance to build the product with the users hand in hand to give really good feedback on what worked and what did not work. So that was sort of the principle, and I think really from the fall of 2010, that's when the snowball sort of really started to hit, when you saw the general availability of these phones and coupled with social media being what everybody was used to, and integrating across different systems. That was sort of the point, Q4 in 2010, where we really saw the snowball starting to run, and it's been a fun ride ever since.
Now tell me the meaning behind Edomondo.
So Endo is so it's actually, to be honest, we were looking through more than 1,000, actually more than 2,000 different URLs. One issue when you start a tech company that relatively late is to actually get a name that's not already claimed. But at the same time, we wanted to find something that would resemble a community and activity and other kinds of stuff. And Endo is short for endorphins. And Mondo is the world in Esperanto, which is just the international language. It's actually also the same in Italian, and if you exchange the O with the U in Spanish. But it was really to create a world of endorphins. That was the base, and that's where the name come from. And it kind of came up in a brainstorm between Mette and Kristen and I. Somebody was saying, endorphins, and I'm an old language student, so I was like, oh, okay, Mundo and Endo, Mundo, and people were like, no, it's kind of too long and what have you, but it kind of just stuck, it's just stuck, and today we're quite happy about it because we never anticipated or wanted Endomondo to be something for just runners. We really wanted to create a network for people that were active, a social fitness network. That was what we wanted to create. So being for runners only or bikers only was never really the essence of what we're trying to create. So today we're very, very happy about our name because it doesn't talk too much to any particular sport. It talks to a broad range of people.
Wow, good. And what gave you guys the foresight just to see so far ahead, before the iPhone, like really what made you like see that vision and really know that it was going to work?
So we didn't know it was going to work. That was the bet we took. From the beginning when we saw this, we had this vision of a social fitness network. But neither of us really believed that we could do this, becoming a Facebook of fitness just like that. We basically thought that, okay, so Facebook and others, they are claiming the community space per se. So in order to create our own, we could either build that within the Facebook platform, which was not possible at the time, or we could try to create our own. And we needed a tool to do that. We needed a tool to drive engagement. And that tool, it's back to the thing on really expensive sports watches at the time. That tool, we had to bet that the mobile was going to make it, and that we could bring that cost down. So it was. We looked at all these industry reports. You have to remember, we were working at McKinsey at the time, and I was working in the media sector, in the media industry. So I was into these numbers all the time for different global media companies, looking at all different media verticals, one of them being the internet. And when you looked at it and also the mobile industry, which was slowly closely connected. And if you looked at it, it was not a matter of if the GPS came out into the phones, it was a matter of when it was going to come out. So that was where the confusion and the discussion came up. And I remember that before the iPhone came out, you know, people were betting it was going to happen in 2013, 2014. That's where you're going to see a general availability of these phones. But the iPhone just changed this completely. And it, you know, in all honesty, we betted on it, but it was also a strike of luck that our bet came through.
And I'm glad you touched on your management consulting background, because that was going to lead to my next question. Were you guys bootstrapping, you know, working both as a management consultant while you were building, you know, building it on the ground up, or did you guys just completely leave McKinsey to start it up, or were you doing a combination of both?
So we were definitely talking about this way before we left. We were doing different things. You know, I was the one working in the media vertical, and I remember one day Kristen called me up and said, "Hey, I quit it. I can't do this anymore." And we talked about this for a long time, like almost 3/4 of a year. We've met for brunch and lunches and stuff when we could. We were traveling a lot, and McKinsey would travel a lot. So predominantly you meet in the weekends and you discuss things.
Right, exactly.
And that's what we did. And when he called me, I was like, okay, let's go for it. This is what we want. Let's go for it now. There's never a good timing. So we just went for it. But we completely quit our jobs and went for it. There was no in-between in our mind. We didn't really believe in creating a company without doing it full-time, and especially not when you're working at McKinsey where you do 60 to 80 hours a week. So it was like either or, and we chose to go for it full-on. There's a bonus system there, so we had a bit of bonus, not a whole lot, to be honest, but enough that would take us like half a year out. Without going totally bankrupt. And we thought that was going to be enough to get funding. We were pretty naive at the time. Then Lehman Brothers went down. Now, there were a lot of things we didn't anticipate. One of them was Lehman Brothers and the entire financial crisis, which totally shut down on the cash flow from investors and VCs around the world. So we found ourselves in the midst of all of this, trying to raise money for a project where no trends and no experts were bidding on us. So needless to say, it was a complete disaster, really, to trying to raise money. So we ended up bootstrapping for a year and a half with no money whatsoever. And we took all the loans that we could get individually and we tossed them into the company. A major deficit of being a 3 McKinsey consultant was that none of us could actually code. And I don't think we would do the same thing again. We were an overmanaged company with not enough tech expertise. So all of the money that we did some jobs here and there, and we got a prototype out there, and that was enough to get a bit of cash in there. We didn't use that cash for the first investment. We didn't use it for ourselves at all. We hired engineers right away, and they got equity. They saw the potential, and we did that for quite a long time. And we were, I think, bootstrapping for 18 months with no salary. And then we started earning like next to nothing just to pay the really basic, like the rent. We still couldn't really survive, but we could, you know, we wouldn't go into too far of a debt. So this changed with the first round of capital, but it took more than 2 years for people really to see these trends.
This concludes part one of HIT Innovation Founder Stories with Jakob Nordenhof-Jonk of Endomondo. Thank you for listening and have a great day.